Yeah, I'm Jackson. I have zero experience with carpentry.
I studied at a school for historic preservation in Boston and learned about how things were built, you know, 250 years ago.
There's a long way to go. I'm nowhere near the top. Not that I thought I was, but there's so much more to do out there.
Welcome back to the Passion for Craft podcast. Today, same day, different verse. We are talking about a comment that Bryn has received. Do you want to read the comment? What's the best way of introducing this?
Well, it's about styles, and this guy had a very insightful question that I've wondered myself from time to time, and thought it'd be worth a conversation.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you want me to read it out to preserve your...
Yes, that'd be great. Good call.
He's a little sick, so if you've noticed coughing in the past two episodes, that's why. I've been binging your YouTube content, and I have a question. This is from Lightscapes Outdoor. You talk a lot about historic precedent, and it seems like most new construction is trying to be something from the past, whether it knows it or not. Very insightful. How do you ensure that you are not leaving a room an open... Wait, sorry. How do you ensure that you're not... that you are leaving room and an opening for a new design element to emerge in the 21st century? Are we still in the postmodern design era, or are we in something new altogether? Is it even... possible to recognize a new era of design style while we're in that era, or can you only recognize it in the rearview mirror? Last question, what, if any, design elements do you like that are truly new within the last 20 years, meaning that they aren't some version of a design that's from decades in the past? I'm of the opinion that architecture stopped being interesting after World War II. Some posit that we believed we were God after the creation of the atomic bomb that destroyed our desire to create beautiful things. What do you think? I am become death.
I recommended a book to him called Down Detour Road. It was written by an architect who was struggling with life after the recession and when no architects had a job, and he had just out of architecture school, kind of. Certainly disenchanted by the profession and everything else. So there's a lot there.
It's a lot there.
And what are your initial thoughts?
Well, let's boil it down to the core first. Kind of the major themes of this are, what are modern design elements / what will the future design elements be? Like,
I think he's saying architectural styles. He goes, basically he's saying, you know, with all this focus on the past, are we not, you know, not leaving room for a new architectural style that could evolve or come about? And you know, if it is, what is that? What is that style? Can you even recognize a style during that time period? Like, you know, most of the architectural styles, Georgian and Federal and Greek Revival, were named after those times past. Of people looking back to it, architectural historians looking back, going, "Well, that was kind of the Victorian era, or that was the Georgian area because it was King George." So I have my own opinions on this, but what are y'all's opinions on this?
It's hard to say for residences, but I feel like civic buildings and, you know, I guess public buildings seem to be modern, right? So, but houses, what are they? They're just gable ends. I don't know, mm-hmm. You know? Like, what do you call that?
What do you call that? That's a good question.
I think you coined a phrase for it. It's like the early American crap period, right?
Yeah, early crap. Yeah. What are your thoughts?
My thoughts, number one, are nothing is new under the sun.
Agreed. So 100%.
There's a little bit of it where it's like, you know, I feel like we've just talked a lot about on this show, like how we got here, and starting from like Greek and Roman era, where it's like, what were they inspired by? Well, they were inspired by the human body. And so what was that inspired by? Oh, it's inspired by God. So like, there's like a very clear progression in architecture of like, we've modeled things after ourselves, and then we've modeled things after people who have modeled things after ourselves. And now we're just continuing to do that. So like, and I would say the Greco-Roman era architecture stuff is the best rule book or guidebook that we have on architecture right now, the most black and white you can possibly get are things that have been revived from Greek and Roman times, based off of everything that I've heard from you guys. So that's my thoughts.
That's really what you've heard from us?
Yes. Is that not accurate? Am I missing things?
I'd hope we would have been more clearer than that, because I don't feel like that's an accurate thing.
I just look at the guidebooks that were written that were modeled after Vitruvius, whatever.
And Palladio, yeah. So
like, I mean, those are modeled, and they are strictly written down in mathematical formulas.
Way back in the past. Way back. Looking at new stuff today.
But looking
like at, you wouldn't look at a new house and go, that's Greek and Roman.
No. But I'm saying that's the best graded rubric that we have on like what is right and what is wrong style wise, and every style has evolved from that. You know what I mean? Like, if you look at a Georgian house, the reason that it's good versus like a poorly done Georgian house is the proportions. Like, that's something y'all have said time and time again. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, well, where did we get our proportions from? We got them from the Greeks and Romans. So like, everything kind of boils down back to that point, which boils back down to like, they modeled it after the human body. So that's where I'm coming from.
Yeah, I can see that for sure.
So see, I got him on my side.
What are you? What?
Yeah. What? We got problems with.
Thanks. You got problems.
First of all, I do think we need to make a distinction between something Richard said, is that commercial versus residential.
Yeah, that is a good point.
I think that there's, you know, the way architects are trained today, in general, okay, is that the greatest and finest architects are graded by their, you know, how far they can move the needle and how innovative they can be on the commercial side. And most of those great architects aren't really spending much time on residential design. I think they've kind of given up the residential world to peons and heathens. And
like
so,
us.
Yeah, like us. And so I don't think they would look at the work that we're doing as mattering, right? Mm-hmm. That's not important work. We're doing important work. And so, but I think making that distinction also highlights the challenge and the problems with new design is that there's not a lot of designers involved in the, you know, in building houses.
Mm-hmm.
And so the, you know, the ICAA and the high-end residential guys that we know are in a stratosphere, you know, they're in ivory towers. They're the 1% of people that can afford them. I mean, literally plans cost $1 million from these people. Anyway, it's just very expensive. And so then when I make that statement, you say, okay, well, even the good residential architects aren't involved in the everyday building. And so I would say that the majority of houses that are built today, I'm trying to think what number it would be, 95% of them are some form of production house and or production custom house that are not designed, okay? They are assembled from parts and pieces and mixed match things. And so can you have a next design? I don't think so, because no one is designing them, right? They are the whole system for how a new residential design has come about is either relegated to the very wealthy, or they are either you can afford great things and have taste, or you're with the masses and you're, you know, stuck with McDonald's. Mm-hmm. And so it's
kind of like the progress stopped.
It did,
you know, like it's stagnated.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah,
it's kind of just like, here we are. Like, where, if there was a new style, what does that come from production buildings? Like,
maybe this is another way for us to kind of circle back to the death of craft, is that, you know, without design, right? With kind of this stopping, this point where you're just kind of like, you know, well, we're here,
yeah.
You know, we continue to make the same things over and over again, thinking that we're being unique when we paint it white and we have black windows instead of, you know, mauve and you know, white windows. Yeah. And so it's just, it's, we are stuck in a tough place that I don't think a new design is going to come from this, because there's no creativity. There's no person out there stirring the pot, you know, mixing up all of those different elements that can come up with something inspirational and wonderful.
This always leads me back to the dream community that we've talked about multiple times, where we could like make a community, not, you know, architects that you've worked with, you know, I'm obviously not an architect, but people who understand the orders and everything, make a community of houses. It would have to come from something, someone like that who knows, because it seems like all those styles, like Georgian, Federal, they all kind of like borrowed and, you know, snowballed up to be, I guess, where it stopped, what, 1940?
Yeah. It's interesting, the two things. One, you know, one thing to do is to look at how styles evolve. Like, how does a style become a style, right? Right? You know, in one respect, and going back to, like, let's just say English houses or French houses versus maybe Mediterranean houses, right? They are distinct and different. They use natural materials, the stone, the slate, the,
'cause that's a big portion of it.
They do. It is. And,
oh yeah. And
you have steep pitched roofs because of snow loads. Whereas in the South and Mediterranean, you don't really have, you know, any snow loads. And so the low pitched roofs. And so styles in the original ones, the ones that we copy today, are styles that have evolved from, because of local community, local sources of materials, and local climate changes that that were required.
Necessity. We built this roof like this because we had to.
We had to, right? Yeah. If we built it any other way, it would have fallen. It would have failed. And so there is a, now we call it a style, but they wouldn't have called it a style. That's just
practical.
That's practical. That's how we build. And so, that, you know, one thing is to look at, you know, styles and go, okay, well, because so many of the materials that we use today are you know, manufactured and fake, and because we're building in so many different, you know, eras and regions, that it's hard to have a style evolve, okay, because, you know, things move too fast. You know, there's
yeah,
they move too fast.
You know what would be cool? Or go ahead.
Well, I want to hear that just in a second. But, you know, just one thing on that. Like, if we're truly talking like styles evolving based on like what necessity dictates, there are two examples that are coming to mind immediately. One far less appealing than the other. I'll start with that one. A lot of houses are trying to go green and trying to like really be good on that. And so I know solar panel roofing is another one. Stylistically, not beautiful, not good.
It's function.
But it's high function. And so when you're thinking of a steep roof, like that can be made beautiful in a lot of ways, but also, you know, it is function. So then the other side of that that I think is beautiful, and I can't remember where it is and I don't want to misquote it, but I want to say like Switzerland or Sweden or Germany or somewhere like that, has been looking into doing, they need more plants in like eco-culture, or so that they can like help offset their carbon emissions or whatever. And so they've been doing like green roofs and like doing faux planters on their roofs.
I've seen that.
You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's an example I would say of a more recent, like that's probably only been in existence for the past 10, 20 years. I'm sure there are other instances of it, but like,
like that's becoming affecting bigger, a style.
But that is affecting a style. Like that is an active affect of a style that we're seeing.
What are you going to say?
I was just thinking of our region, because you mentioned in these regions, like what are we known for? It's like cattle and, you know, country and horses. Leather houses. And stuff. Yeah, I'm just like, how would we, if we were like, forget, like we know the rest of the world, we're here in Texas, what can we build that's beautifully and functions for this lifestyle? Like that's the only way you're going to come up with another, a new style. I feel like,
well, if you look at, you know, then it, let's say we come forward in history to the, you know, 18th, 19th century, the 1800s, And you think about Greek revival, Egyptian revival, Italianate, you know, Second Empire, okay? All of those styles were inspired from new findings that had happened in the world, right? The Greek revival was because the Ottoman Empire had, you know, there was a civil war with Greece, and they basically won back their freedom from the Ottoman Empire. It was a big deal at the time. Byron died, the poet Byron died fighting in that battle. It was a big thing, and it inspired this, you know, think about it, in that world, we didn't have newspapers or internets or things like that. Had newspapers, but they weren't like our newspapers. They didn't have news like we have it. That was an event that took place that reminded people of our original findings, and we came up with this Greek revival style, which is very popular in America, an early democracy. And so, you know, inspired by things that are happening outside the world. Okay, Egyptian revival, same thing. The Napoleon had found a bunch of the Egyptian ruins and had gone through Egypt and done stuff, highlights all this Egyptian architecture.
What does Egyptian revival look like? I mean, that sounds fascinating. Right, like that. I mean, I'm imagining like
the Egyptians
hieroglyphics on the wall, or like
that would be the decoration in the frieze.
For real?
Yeah, and so
they had some wild stuff.
Yeah, the columns, the capitals, and the columns were very plant like, and so anyway, and then you go Second Empire. You know, obviously by the Second Empire, Napoleon and his predecessor, and so. Anyway, they were all inspired by world events that were taking place that caused people to look around from outside of their thing and go, mm-hmm. "Oh, look, that's interesting." Yeah. And then they would take that inspiration and come up with this, you know, these find these styles totally. That were inspired by that. And so, there's number two way that styles evolve and things like that. The arts and crafts. You know, the bungalow was a bungalow from India, right? It was a very simple, it was a rejection of the Victorian, but it too was, you know, maybe that's the last period where you have a great designer, Frank Lloyd Wright, coming up with the Prairie School of Architecture and being inspired by the prairies of the Midwest, you know, those low hung roofs, very horizontal in design. And so, you know, that would be maybe the third way is that you have this creative genius who comes along and says, you know, here's what things should look like, you know, and here's what it's inspired from, and here's the ideal, and here's how it's going to look, and here's what's going to take place.
Did
they say that?
Like, did Frank Lloyd Wright come along and be like, hey, I want everyone to start designing houses like this or buildings like this? Or was it more of just he started doing it, he like got benefactors who were on board, he funded his projects, and then people saw it and recognized the genius? Do you know the order of the dominoes falling there, or is it...
It's a good question. I think of like the Roby House. Okay. That's the house in Chicago built in 1904. A lot of the concepts and the things that he was doing, you know, show up in our houses in the ranch period, you know, 50 years later. So certainly he was a genius thinking ahead of his time, open floor plans, horizontal lines, wow. Not vertical and things like that. He was supremely arrogant, and probably would tell you that no, I decided that it was going to be this way. But he did.
Did you meet him?
He was this creative, you know. I don't know the chicken or the egg, which came first, but you know, I think the first thing is he was inspired to design a certain way, and mm-hmm. and then decided later that. This is the direction.
This is the way.
Anyway, it's so there's the three methods of a style coming out. Okay, if we can just keep mm-hmm. it loose. One, it evolves from.
Are you gonna do the second one?
it evolves from this natural style, this uh-huh. natural thing. Two,
okay, it, kept it up.
Two. It's an inspiration, and three, you know, you have a creative genius. Okay.
What was number two again?
So looking at how a style would evolve today, right? You would say, well, it would rely on one of those things. Either we're going to, you know, out of necessity, right? Something's going to happen.
I don't see that happening.
I don't either, because it takes too long, and
industry now, like, also, bring me these supplies.
If there was something out of necessity, one, it would have already happened, but then two, if it does come about, it would be something ugly like the solar panels. Like, it would be so technological of a fix, it would not have the beauty aspect.
I don't disagree with that. There's an inspiration. Uh-huh. We don't know what that inspiration would be. In the past, it was a new finding, a new culture, a new thing we had discovered.
Wouldn't be a new thing. That would actually be, hey, we're looking to the past.
Mm-hmm. It's true. Let's play along with me. Let's say we go to Mars and we actually find a civilization there. And we see their architecture, and it's all of a sudden, oh my gosh, that's so cool. Mm-hmm. And there becomes a Marsian architecture, right? That could be an inspiration that oh, I saw how they did this, and hey, we're going to copy some of these elements and details.
So you're saying we can't do it here on Earth?
We're saying there's got to be inspiration from somewhere.
Yeah, right? And it's more than likely, pessimist over here. It's probably not going to happen.
Mm-hmm. It's unlikely. And then the third is the creative genius. And of course, again, you don't know. William Levitt, I would put in the Elon Musk category for what he did with production building, for how he thought about building, for the things they did and things he created. Unfortunately, he wasn't focused on the design. He was focused on the process. Right. And so, he was copying the past. He was doing little capes and things like that. Mm-hmm. I think it actually probably goes back to something Jackson was saying about the function being the driver for new designs, is that if you look at the home building catalogs, that, Builder Magazine and stuff puts out, they're fascinating to, if you want to spend a few hours looking through those things. There's one called a Schaus. Have we talked about this?
Yeah, Shop House.
The Shop House.
Oh, yeah.
And so, these highly, highly functional houses. And I think that they're popular because people are like, nothing anybody building is beautiful anyway.
Yeah.
I might as well have something that's highly functional. And I've always kind of liked the barn idea. And so we end up with something that is, design wise kind of gross, but that highly functioned piece that I think people like. I think people like that. I think that people like to, because then you get into the metrics of, it's this efficient, and, it has, it runs on this much energy, and it, I get to park my RV inside, and whatever those things that they want to tick off the box that end up driving it. But
I was just doing some research, prompted by our producer, Austin, and I found some really cool homes that I think you guys would like, and I think it's the future of new homes.
So this is the new style.
So I'm on Amazon.com right now, and if you type in house on Amazon, they have homes ready to go. 15 by 20 foot portable prefabricated tiny home. Mobile, expandable, plastic prefab house.
How much?
Well, the price point's not great. you might as well buy a car. It's $13,889 for a tiny home. But, hey, be a homeowner today for $13,000.
It's prime.
And it's prime. It'll get here.
Is it really prime?
Let me see. There's no prime shipping on this, unfortunately. Oh. But free delivery by March 18th through the 28th. So
it's not bad.
Oh, actually, there's one. There's only five left in stock. February 26th to the 27th. And we're recording on the 15th. So, not bad. Anyway, sorry. It's a little bit of a joke. But also, it made me think, tiny home is the next function home, I think. Where a lot of people, I just remember talking with friends on the Patagonia trip that I went on, that were like, yeah, not really looking at moving out of my parents' like place, but they want me out of the house, so I'm going to build my own tiny home on their property. And it served form, function, and everything like that. They were like, I'll get my electricity from solar panels, I'll get my water from rain, and I'll get, you know, whatever. Living rent-free, quite literally, just on their parents' land, because it's free. And there's like a little bit of, you know, function there that is driving the reason for the creation of this home. And the home is going small. And I think, like, right now, we're not seeing it a ton, but I think we will in the next little bit see a pushback. And this might be just a hot take and a terrible one. And so, you know, I'd be curious y'all's thoughts.
It's a hot take and a terrible one.
I think, well, thanks for letting me know. I think we're going to see a pushback against big homes soon.
Already have? Oh, yeah.
Will you explain that a little bit? Because I kind of keep thinking everyone wants bigger and better.
I think people are laugh at the McMansion. Mm-hmm. You know, no one wants a McMansion. It's I think there is a pushback against that already. I think there's a desire to be, have a simpler life. Mm-hmm. And I think that people look back at the 80s or the 90s or whenever that McMansion era was and says, I don't want to do that again. Mm-hmm. And the cottage movement and the minimalistic, you know, movement right now is a rejection of that, you know, overabundance. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think the fact that your friends wanted to live, you know, is a minimalistic move, right? Mm-hmm. I remember in high school, you know, talking with my friends and we were like, you know, who's going to make the first million? And so it was I don't know. Actually, there was a guy, Scott Kimple. Pretty quick. And he nailed it. And everyone's like, dang, we're still in college. And
still in college?
Yeah, he was driving around in a limousine.
Go Scott.
McMansion owner, sounds like.
Yeah.
His
license plate was MCMSN. McMansion.
Thank you.
You didn't catch it the
first time. No, I didn't. I was like, MSNBC.
McDonald's messenger.
I forgot what they were going to say.
You were saying how even in college, I was thinking you were going to go.
Who's
going to make the first million?
Which y'all were living in a little house.
Anyway, the point is that I think for a new style today, that there's going to have to be, you know, we're either looking for the creative genius, okay, someone to come along and inspire us all, okay? The tiny house movement will take off more than we think it will. Mm-hmm. I don't think it will, but it's possible.
Low odds.
Only because of the homeless crisis, only because of, you know, just, you know, recessions, people not being able to afford as much. I mean, houses are
That was the thing I was thinking about.
Like, houses are not affordable.
They're saying millennials will not, like, I don't know, something like 80% of them will never own a home or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think my generation was the first generation that wasn't going to be as wealthy as their parents.
Okay.
And so, you know, it's before that time, everybody, you know, had been outperforming their parents. Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, our generation was the first one that wasn't going to do that.
And everything's somehow getting better, right? Something's not adding up.
Something's gone.
And so the third thing would be that there's that the manufactured housing might do something, right? Because
would that even be on your radar, though? Because I feel like we would just be like, oh, that's ugly.
I actually feel I feel like that's exactly what's happening.
I think that there's a number of very high profile companies that went out of business and they had billions of dollars and they were going to change building. Okay. And a lot of these Silicon Valley companies that get their start, go out and raise a bunch of money and they're going to change the way building's done. And the problem is people look at the inefficiencies of home building today, you know, building it out in the with no shelter. I mean, it's kind of crazy, right? When you could be building it, you know, covered and things aren't getting dirty or wet or anything else. And so it is an inefficient way of building, but the
What are you talking about? What is that? What's
like the materials are getting rained on and stuff? Yeah. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, imagine building a car and you know, not building it in a factory.
Okay,
and just, you know, it's getting rained on.
It's wood, though. It's okay. Right? To get wet wood.
Well, in our climate where it dries out, it's better. But if you grow up in Seattle where it's always wet, mm-hmm. then, you know, you're, that wood's never drying.
Okay.
And so, you know, it's.
I don't get out much. Okay, I'll stay here.
The
Richard's Grand Tour is going to be glorious.
And so I'm saying it's an opportunity. Okay, I'm saying that I'm not necessarily for what I see them doing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I see the thousands that they're building, and they are glorified, mini containers, right? The yeah, storage containers. And so they're modular, meaning they're the same thing over and over again. They try to be visually interesting by adding these, you know, weird windows and different things. And so it's just hard to make a rectangle beautiful. And so the things that they're doing in order to make them over and over and over again, and so that in a production capacity, so that they're efficient, because that's what they're trying to solve right now is efficiency. No one has done it yet. Yeah. Okay. No one has done it, built those things effectively enough that it is changing building. It's still like 1% or 2% of all building is modular building. And so they find little pockets, like they can build hotels because each hotel room is a little compartment.
Oh, yeah.
and they're building hotels like that. But it's,
Can I bring something up that I think plays?
It does have. Let me just finish my point.
Yeah, go for it.
It does have opportunity, because if you think that's the way cars were changed, okay,
right.
And the cars were hand built, you know, carriages were hand built and everything else,
yeah.
And then slowly they began to be mass produced. And cars are awesome. I mean, cars are cool looking, right? Mm-hmm. I just think the leap before our houses are beautiful. Because they're still trying to figure out the efficiency piece, it'll be a while. Like 50 years.
And on that note, like even thinking about like the 3D printed homes and stuff like that, like that is in a way efficient in the same way that like a car manufacturing thing is efficient, but it provides almost too little structure in order to actually be good. Because you could get someone out there being like, I want to live in the Las Vegas sphere, but made out of concrete. You know what I mean? And like, you're like, you want to live in a bubble? Like, what are you doing? You know what I mean?
No, I'm not following.
Well, you're basically just saying like, with the car manufacturing industry, the car manufacturer decides on a design that they have said, hey, this is a beautiful design. We are going to mass produce this design.
Mm-hmm.
And so
you're saying the 3D printer can kind of run.
3D printer can do whatever roughshod, it wants yeah. every single time.
Yeah.
And so you're getting no standardization. You're getting no, like there never becomes a style. There becomes a material that's commonly used, but it's never a style that's now put into place because anyone can do anything. Like they can want like the 2-year-old hand-drawn house, or they can want the sphere that they're living, you know, an igloo.
I think too, like the things that I look at and think are beautiful, they're not ever mass produced.
Right.
They're not ever like easy.
Mm-hmm.
They're always hard and difficult.
Yeah.
So it just doesn't even fit in my like mind that would ever happen. Like if you think about, I don't know if there was styles in the past that we don't know about because they died, but like all the styles we always talk about, Federal, Greek Revival, Georgian, all those, like those are all beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're talking about like this 3D printed house, I highly doubt it's going to like catch my attention.
Right.
You know?
So, yeah,
that's a great point.
Well, what the 3D printed house does is it makes the production piece of the house easy.
Right.
And so, you know, then people will assume that production and design are the same thing, which is what your point is that they end up, well, I can do a bubble. I can do, you know, look at, I did a kidney bean, you know, I want to live in a banana.
The Chicago bean.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it just, you know, it all of a sudden you're like, okay, wait.
That's not even a house.
No, like you're
building a shape that you're living in.
Just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Yes. What, is that from Jurassic Park?
Maybe.
Another point that our producer Kristen brought up is the something that I think it may already be happening, like in our design world, or in, and it's less craft, like the style of a home per se, and more of like the design of a home. But I think maybe not a creative genius, but at least a trendsetter has come along and has revolutionized the way we do design. And I've been thinking about it like four or five times throughout this conversation already. And I think I'd be upset if we didn't bring them up, but Chip and Joanna Gaines have really popularized farmhouse modern. I mean, taking it and giving it its own name, which to our producer Kristen's point is like a very minimalist style that plays off of like things like that. And then to the minimalist extreme, there are more like things are becoming more popular. And I know this isn't technically minimalist, but like exposed brick walls or like cinder blocks, tin roofs, like those type of things have made a resurgence and have made a comeback, even though they're like simpler materials. With the rise of this like farmhouse modern, more like minimalist style, these things have started appearing more, and they typically happen interior. Like there's not a lot of effectual change on an exterior of a home, mm-hmm. but that is now like the style du jour right now.
I think your point about Chip and Joanna is good.
Yeah.
Because I think they have invented a style. Okay. Mm-hmm. They have popularized one for sure.
Yeah.
They cornered that market, whether they invented it, right. They basically took what was happening and basically said, it's going to be this kind of chic. It's going to be this kind of cool detail. And we're going to have these, you know, shiplap walls and whatever those different things were. They, you know, homogenized that and brought it together into
the production homes that we saw. They had shiplap walls.
Into a style. Okay. Yeah. You know, that other stuff, I don't even know what you're talking about.
I was talking what she's talking about.
I know, like, but you're using examples that weren't exactly right. But hey,
I'm the apprentice. What can I say?
But I think they're the closest example. I'm trying to sit there.
It seems like it's like, okay, she brought up like earlier Airbnbs. Like we go and stay at Airbnbs. I get out a little bit, okay? Like a lot of them do have like that just like aluminum piece or whatever, just like this, you know, black window. It's just, you know, no divided lights. Just, I don't know. It's just real minimal and kind of boring. And it's kind of cool for us because we're like, oh, you know, this is all new and we go there with the kids and everything. But if you were to ask me, like, is that like a style? I mean, I guess, but I don't know.
I think that style is like, I think they're both in response to modernism. Like,
or they're cheap too.
For
sure. I think that's why people are doing them. Yeah. I think it's because they're cheap. And I think it's
a cheap version of modern.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, modern, big, I might not be saying the right style, but big open windows.
Well, you said like, builders love modern, right? Because they're no moldings. Yeah, so we're going to be done with this quick. And we're charging more because it's modern.
Yeah.
It's like.
Back to this guy's point as we wrap this up. Okay. Back to this guy's thing is just like, is there even a style today? Mm-hmm. And I think it's too easy today to fake it from flippers and everything else to that you fake a style with, you know, brick on the wall or a piece of aluminum or the black windows or these other things.
Shiplap.
Yeah. You know, they fake that it's going to be trendy. It's going to be hip and look, I've got a style and I didn't have to spend very much.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to go away, in my opinion. That there is going to be a backlash to this boring houses. I mean, she showed a picture of the inside of this thing. It had concrete floors and white sheetrock walls. And that was it. Well, there's going to be a backlash to that. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be – everybody's going to go, yeah, everybody does this. Everything mm-hmm. looks the same. It looks like a tin can in there. And so, you know, we'll see, okay? Because if you think of the McMansion era being in the 80s and 90s, okay?
Yeah.
And then we go through this simplicity era and this minimalism, okay? Typically, we get tired of that minimalism and we go back to, you know, more classical, more traditional or something.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. My video on Instagram that was on the white box syndrome had like 1 million views, okay? People like, I'm so sick of this. I'm so sick of this. Mm-hmm. Some people liked it, right? But most people are like, I'm sick of this. If that's just happening now, you know, in 5 years, I think that there's going to be a backlash to that.
Bigger one,
I still don't mm-hmm. think we invent a new style until something happens. Something's got to shake up the market.
There has to be a genius.
You can't teach taste. You don't learn.
I don't know about that. I feel like I learned a lot of what I like from your videos, what you've taught.
But the more, I feel like the more you're exposed to good things, the more you recognize like what a bad thing is.
I think that's what it is.
Okay.
But that's teaching, right?
I think you are exposed to things, and like you can get develop an eye for art after you've seen a lot of art.
Right.
Right. And so I think all that's happening is that you're just seeing the historic precedent that's out there and going, oh yeah, okay. And now you can look at something and go, oh, yeah, that's cheap. Mm-hmm. So I don't think
the taste was always there. No.
Yeah. Just dusted it off.
Yeah.
Well, cool. So in answer to the question, is there a current new style or is there a futuristic style? Right now the answer is no. It's going to take one of those three catalysts to get us there.
That's my theory.
We need a creative genius. No, I'm just kidding.
Something crazy to happen. Elon Musk's solar panel roofs are going to be the new.
No. He wouldn't be able to do it.
All right, guys. Well, thanks for watching this episode of Passion for Craft. We will see you on the next one.